Today's daf in Masechet Ketuvot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Pehe. And we got up to yesterday, Avimi Berei de Rabbi Avon. So we were talking about the issue of Tfisa, and when the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, at what point Tfisa would be meaningful, and that there's an afkamina between Tfisa Mechayim and Tfisa after the Yorshim were already Yorish, because the Yorshim, if you're like Rabbi Akiva, the Yorshim would be Yorish, and then the Nichse, the Yasmi are not Meshubat for Metata. By the way, that's not true anymore. In the same way that we have a Takrana, after the change of circumstances in which Jews were unable in many countries to own real estate, the change that affected the Ketuvah, namely the Afilu Miglima D'Akatvoi, became also a takana at the time of the Ga'inim to allow even collection of a balachov would be possible from metaltele. But here we're talking about at a time when where the ikar halacha was that metaltele to the atme are not mishubde to balachov, and so there would be a nafkamina whether the yorshim were already kainas. So according to Rabbi Akiva, remember that Rabbi Akiva holds that since you can only collect on any other basis besides the Yerusha, you can only collect after making a Shvua. And therefore, it turns out that at the moment of the Morish's death, the only real Tviyah that existed was the Tviyah of the Yitomim, because they are the Yarshim. And therefore, they immediately get it. Now, the question was, we also had Nafkaminas about where the property was located. Was it located in Rosh Sarabim, which it's not Shaykh to be Canaan? Was it located in a simta? Or there are those shittas that said it doesn't matter where it's located at the din of Rabbi Akiva, is that it belongs to the Yatomi in terms of Yerusha without any kind of kinyan. In any event, we were in the middle of discussing the various cases of Tfisa. And we said that in the event that the Tfisa was during the lifetime of the person that owed the money and it wasn't coming from the Yatomi, then of course Rabbi Akiva also takes the position that Tfisa is meaningful if the other person is capable of getting it, and then you become a Motzi Miyada, and you would have to bring a riot to be a Motzi Miyada. So now the Gemara wants to go into various cases in which we show, the Rif says the main point over here is to show the variations in which it was accepted as a Dover Pashat, the various elements of a Tfisa, and that Tfisa would help, and so on in all of these cases, and therefore we bring variations on a theme, so that we shouldn't ask why we need every one of these cases. Each one was an actual case. You never ask about why do we need a case. Obviously, the case came up and needed to have a psak. As far as asking why a Gemara bothers to bring a case on a Brisa, obviously we ask. Or on two people have the same discussion, obviously we ask, what do you need the same machlokas for? But when it comes to the question of why a Gemara will quote a case over there, the Rif says that it's just possible that the Gemara is quoting a plethora of cases in order to indicate that this was taken as a Dover Pashat in all different places of Batei Dinim, and that it became the basis of the Psak of how it is that we accept a Tfisa. So we got up to Avimi Berei de Rabbi Avo. This is about a quarter of the way down. And we're talking about additional cases now, Tfisa, not where it would be Nogea, the question of Ksuvas Isha necessarily. So anyway, the issue over there was that he owed money to people in Bechozoi. So Avimi Berei de Rabbi Avo, Vamask Bezuzi Bechozoi. Now Bechozoi, we've seen, was very difficult to get to. We talked about a case where it could cost you more money to get there than it would be worth in order to even collect your chov from there. In any event, he had to send someone to pay the money back. And so he sent Choma Berei de Rabbi Baravu, and Choma went, gave them the cash, and then he said to them, okay, now hand me back the shtar, which is normally what you have to do. When you're paid, you give back the shtar. So they said to him, "Why do we're not giving you back the shtar. It happens to be that you're a dear Avimi Berei de Rabbi Avo owes us on several items. This was only one thing. We're keeping the shtar because that we're able to collect from Nechasim Meshubatim, and we'll apply your payment towards another loan that he owes us, which was a loan that was made by Alper, and that we wouldn't be able to collect. We have a right to apply the money for whatever loan we want. That's what the credit cards company all say to you, right? No, no, that payment wasn't for this month's bill. This month's bill you're going to pay 18% interest on. That was for last year's bill. All right, so that's exactly what they said to this poor shliach in Beit Chozai. So the shtar, sitra means minas, from the tzad, sitra, like the sitra achra. So the sitra, this is an old loan, which was a milval pair. So thank you very much for the payment, but we're not handing you back that shtar. Oh, boy. So anyway, so poor Chama Berei the Rabba went to Rabbi Abo to try to get them to give him back the shtar. So Rabbi Abo said to him, well, you have witnesses that you paid? So he says, no, I didn't get any witnesses. So Rabbi Abo said, well, so then, you know, you're lucky. I mean, they could have said, lo hayudvarim yoylam, right? Why did they have to admit that you paid anything? They could claim, what is he? I don't know what he's talking about. He never gave us a dime. So therefore, they have amigo. Since they could have said that, and there'd be nothing that you could have done, therefore, yocholi nami lemeimar sitrayninu. Because of that, they all have the same kayach of the ne'emanu to claim that the money was applied to an earlier loan. Okay, now the question is, what happens to the poor shliach over here? I mean, Chama is really in a very tough spot. I mean, he's going to come back. Well, did you pay up my loan? Yeah. Okay, hand me the contract. Well, I didn't get the contract. So now the question is, does Avimi have a claim against Chama Berei the Rabba? Because Chama Berei the Rabba, I mean, was sort of negligent. He should have first gotten the shtar. He should have had witnesses so that this guy wouldn't be able to pull the shtick on him to claim that it's sitrai. So what's the halacha legabe that? Can he be sued? In this case, the shliach maybe could be sued to pay back the money that he shouldn't have given. Is this considered to be a pshia? Ravashi, well, it depends what he was told at the time that he was made a shliach. So if he was told, take the shtar and then give them the money. Okay, so then of course he's negligent and he would have to pay. But if he was told, okay, pay up the debt, bring me back the shtar. So then he just was doing what he was told to do. So you can't blame him. Says the Gemara, that's not true. Bein kach u'bein kach mishalem. Of course, since Lamaisa, the person who is mishaleach ha-shliach, remember, always has the taina, which Gabi is about to write down as a major yesod, which is called l'takuni shedartich v'lola avute. I sent you to make things better for me. I did not make you a shliach to mess me up. So therefore, since the bottom line is that you did mess me up, how could you possibly say I made you a shliach to throw away my money? So therefore, absolutely, he can sue the shliach who was not a shliach because he did not go with the derech of l'takune. He went with avuse, and avuse was not a shliach. Ahi itita. There's another case also of a tvisa. So this is an interesting kind of tvisa. I mean, over here, of course, it boils down to a tvisa with amigo. And there was another case of a woman who was given a deposit by somebody to hold for him and to keep all of these contracts for me because I don't trust the people who work in my house. Fine. So she's got in her kitchen $1 million worth of all kinds of IOUs and things like that, right? Anyway, the guy who gave her the package of documents dies. So the Yorishim come and they ask her, please give us back. We know that our father had given you a whole big box of various shtarot that we need to take to court now. And she says to them, sorry, boys, but your father owed me money. And I'm not giving his paper back. I mean, not that she could use the paper personally because he never transferred it to her. You can't collect someone else's loan. So there was no endorsement. But you ain't getting back your paper until you pay up the loan of your father. So that's a tvisa that sort of makes it impossible for him not to pay back. He's not going to get access to all of those millions. And she says, and it was during your father's life. This was not a tefisa after you already got it. Don't think I'm so stupid, you know, that I don't know the halachas like Rabbi Akiva. I was tefis this while your father was still living. So anyway, so they took her to court. So she comes to Reb Nachman's Beis Din, and Reb Nachman says to her, well, we know that you were given these contracts by their father. And therefore, you have to prove that you were tofes them. The only way you could be tofes them, you can't say, okay, you gave them to me and now I'm keeping them. I mean, it's too late for that. You got them as a picadon. So the only way it could be called tfisa is if the guy came to you, said, give me back my shtarot, and you said to him, now that I'm no longer mufkedet on it, and so now I'm telling you, I'm keeping them because you owe me money. Do you have witnesses that happened? So she says, no. So Reb Nachman says, so then the tfisa is actually effective only after the death of this guy. It's now that you're being tofes. Now you're telling the Arshim you're not giving it back. That's tfisa la'achar mita. And we paskin that tfisa la'achar mita is not considered to be the tfisa because we go according to Rabbi Akiva. So I said that this, of course, is not true any longer because of the issue of the takana of the Ga'enim that nowadays metaltalim are mishu'ubadim. You can actually go after the metaltalim without tfisa. Another maisa was this woman who had to make a shvua. Whatever the case was, she had to make a shvua d'oraisa, and maybe there was one aid against her, maybe it was a maid of a miktsas, whatever the case was. So she goes to the Beis Din in front of Rava. So Rava's wife was Bas Rav Chisda. Rava's wife whispers to Rava, don't accept the shvua from this woman. I happen to know her personally, and I have seen her. Why? But the shvua, she goes around making shvuas loosely. They don't mean anything to her. So she's going to go make a shvua in your Beis Din. You're going to take money on the basis of that shvua. You can't rely on that shvua. So because his wife told him that, so Rava was mahapech the shvua, because the din is that if someone is chashud ala shvua, then what the dayan does is he makes the person who's being toveya, he gives that person the option of making the shvua and collecting instead of the person against whom the tviya was making a shvua and getting away without paying, right? So that you can only do, obviously, when that person is chashud ala shvua. Okay, but he trusted his wife, that it's chashud ala shvua, this woman. Anyway, fine. Zimnin, so some time passed, and there was another case in which Rav Papa and Rav Ada Bar Masna were there where somebody was suing someone, and he brings in a shtar to collect. So Rav Papa whispers to Rava, listen, I just want you to know, I happened to recognize that contract and I saw that it was paid up. And the guy didn't return the contract. He claimed he's holding it in order to get still. Remember, you're allowed to hold the contract if you want to get the money for the writing of the contract, which is the responsibility of the borrower. But the contract was paid. So Rava says to Rav Papa, well, do you have anybody else that can testify to the same effect? And Rav Papa says, no, I'm all alone. So Rava says, listen, I mean, there is Rebbe over here, namely you. I mean, you're the one who's saying that it's been paid, but that's just an eid echad. An eid echad is meaningless. This was pretty crazy because Rav Ada Bar Masna says, oh, so your wife is better than Rav Papa? Your wife tells you that this woman is chashud ala shvua, so you change the whole din, and you're going to go ahead, and you're going to be ma'apik ha-shvua. But the Godel Ador tells you something, you say, well, you know, I don't know if I can trust this guy. And this is amazing. This is mamish amazing because it's so nagei halacha lemaisa. So Rava says, my wife, I have known for 50 years and she has never lied about anything. And therefore I trust her. Rav Papa, just because he's got a big hat and a big reputation and a long coat, I don't know him. I don't trust him. It's amazing, right? So now that, but remember that I've spoken to you before about the amazing difference about the recognition of Beis Din, of what is considered to be trustworthiness versus the insanity of modern so-called batei dinim, even Rachmana Litzlan, even batei dinim and the Koshikin, the Arkaot Akum, where the standard for believing what somebody says is, why should they lie? Amazing, right? It doesn't matter that the person, and the case, I mean, in cases where the case shouts out that the people are lying and they got together to lie, it doesn't make any difference. Why should they lie? So because of that, of course, we trust anybody. This besides the Gzeres HaKosuv. No, Mimela, the Torah says that you need, yeah, Malo Shaker, exactly. But that's where he's got a tiny invest and that would be reliable. So that means, and it gets worse than this, that means that the idea of trusting someone outside of the concept of Eidos is a totally different nature of awareness that Chazal had about the interpretation of reality. Because it's not just, obviously, we think Ruf Papa is going to come along and he's going to say a blatant lie. But the question is that we know that generally people don't know. And this is a very recent chiddush, it's maybe 30 years old, that people do not know that they don't know their own memory, right? It's amazing. In other words, the changes and embellishments and of a person's version of reality is so fluid, and there's so much plasticity over there that unless the person's extremely sophisticated, then you can't trust, even if you trust him, you can't trust his vision of his own reality. That's what Rav is saying. Now, amazingly, at the time of the Ge'enim, they paskened that nowadays, we're talking about nowadays, this was like 1,000 years ago, you know. Nowadays, no Dayan can say he trusts someone because there's no Dayan who knows enough about what trust means to trust someone. Can you imagine? So therefore, the entire concept of trusting somebody is insane. Now, this became this tremendous shaila that was brought to Reb Moshe during the war. So during the war, he was in Moscow, and he says that he got a shaila of people that were eating, and they were eating by their children in Moscow. And their children were commies, were completely, you know, like completely untrustworthy. So these parents wanted to know whether if the children claim that they're feeding them the kashrus and that the meat that these people brought, that's what they're being fed, do they have a right to trust their children? And this became not mamish nogi, I mean, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to eat. So he tina that you see over here that if it's a relative like Bat Rav Chista, that there is where Rava trusted him. So maybe a father to a child is able to say, I trust him. But this, he said, don't rely on this for anything but an emergency situation that, you know, where he brings other rayas as well, that in a mokam atchak where you won't have anything else to eat and so on and so forth. So over there, fine. I mean, this, as opposed to nowadays, you know, people walk into a restaurant, you know, why would he lie? You know, he says it's perfectly kosher. I mean, you don't think this fine gentleman would possibly be buying meat in a supermarket and claiming that it's kosher, do you? And of course, we know the unfortunate realities with that. Hashem Yishmor. Anyway, so this becomes an actual very nogea sugya. Omer of Papa. Hashta da Omar Mar, but so now that Rava said that a Dayan does have the right to say that after being married to her for 50 years, I can tell you that Kimli Begave. So I want to tell you that this, and this is also part of Ramesh's Tshuva, that about my own son, so it could go in Abba Mar, who is my son, I am so clear about his reliability that I would tear up a shtar on the basis of his telling me that it was Parua. Tear up a shtar. You're not, that's stealing money. You can't do that because you trust somebody. The most you can do is not collect with the shtar, but you certainly can't tear it up. Karana, Salka Daitach. Well, he didn't mean Karana. Marana is what he said. I would make it less than a totally usable shtar. I wouldn't tear it up. I wouldn't collect with it. Tosis brings that in such situations, you can make a person make a shvuah and then utilize the shtar. But in any event, as we've seen, the Ge'enim already paskin that you cannot trust anybody for anything, and the Rif paskin is that mamash halacha. So it's not so posh. Okay, more mice. There was a woman who was chayevet eshvua, and she comes to Rav Bibi Bar Abaye's Besdin, and the person who was suing her, that she had been made of a mixes or whatever the situation was, says, look, we came to this Besdin, Rav Bibi Bar Abaye's Besdin, because this was like the most chashuv of a Besdin, but I'm telling you that this woman is going to lie. Because over here, nobody knows her and nobody knows what happened in her life and so on. So I want you, the Dayanim here, he says to Rabbi Bar Abaye, to make her go back to our hometown and take a shvua there in front of the people that know her. And then at least she'll be embarrassed to swear falsely. So after the Mikasvo Modia, maybe she'll be so embarrassed she won't want to swear falsely. I don't know. I hope so. So she said to them, and then what's going to be? So then after I take a shvua over there, so then I'm going to have to schlep back over here and travel for 2 weeks. And then you're going to tell me, okay, you took the shvua, and then you're going to write out that I'm putter and that I don't have to pay this debt. Right? I can't do that. So if you send along a written document that should only be signed afterwards, after I take the shvua in the other besdin, and then they'll give me the document, so that you paskin that I don't owe this money because I swore. Obviously, you can't sign that because I haven't sworn yet, but you'll sign it when I get there and I take the shvua. That way, I'm willing to do that, but it's crazy to make me come back again. So write me a zachvata. A zachvata is an acquittal document. In other words, we potter this woman from paying such and such a shtar, and it will only be given to me, the chimish tabana, after I take that shvua and that bezdin there. So then they'll give me the fact that you, which is the top best, and that you potter me. Omarlu Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. So Rav Bibi Bar Abaye said to the people in the Besdin, okay, write that up for her. So Rav Papi was there, and he said, you know, Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, he comes from Eli HaKohen, you know, because Abaye, remember, Abaye came from Eli. So he says, Mishum de atitu mimuloi, amritu milu muliata. We've seen this many times. You come from people that are cut in half, you know, your lifetime is truncated, you know, so you say things that are cut in half, ridiculous statements. This is insane. What do you mean? Write up a document about an event that hasn't happened in a Besdin? And you understand that what that looks like? A bunch of phonies. They write up that she swore. She never swore. That's called Mirsik Shikra. And Rav already paskin that even an Ashrata, the Dayani, so even a henpeck, which all that you need to do, remember we had this case, all that you need to do is sign on the fact that witnesses have come in to identify the signature. Okay, so that's called being Ma'asher the Shtar, right? And what they would usually do, so they would have the secretary of the court write up, you know, that this document has been approved by the following three dayanim after Adam came in and testified to the veracity of the signature. So Rava said you can't even write that because that would be possible if you wrote it before the Adam actually came. Why? What do I care? It's just writing. Must be, said Rav Papi, because it's Mirsik HaShikra. We don't do things that even look bad. So it looks like, look at this, they wrote it up and it never happened. So Hanami Mirsik HaShikra. So now how can you send a Zachvata where it says, and she swore when she never swore? It's a disaster. But that's not even true. Absolutely not so. We'll prove it from Reb Nachman. Reb Nachman Paskin, that Rabbi Meir used to say, Rabbi Meir held that the din of lishma on a get was not the writing of the get, but the signing. So because of that, according to Rabbi Meir, even if the get per se wasn't written lishma, it would be fine if it was found, if it was signed lishma. So in the case, said Rabbi Nachman, where somebody was walking by a garbage dump and he notices a get in the garbage, and lo and behold, a sign from heaven. A guy by the same name as him is divorcing a wife with the same name as his wife. Oh my gosh. God wrote this get for me. So he can take it out of the garbage can. He can have it signed and use it as a get. So afilo, if he matzah oba'ashba, he founds this get in a garbage pail, v'chatamo, he has the Adam sign on it, and he gives it to his wife. It's a perfectly kosher get because it was signed lishma. And the truth is that even the Rabbanan, who obviously laugh, this is insane. What do you mean you have to write the get? Everybody knows you need the Rav Kuruvi Meir doesn't hold that. But they only have to write the get lishma. But they only argued on Rabbi Meir because of the special din of lishma. They didn't argue about contracts in general where you don't need lishma. So if you found a contract in the garbage pail that happened to have your name and the name of a borrower on it, you know, they would be perfectly happy for you to use that and have it signed. There's no din of lishma. They wouldn't argue on Rabbi Meir al-Bikitin Ashim because they held that the ketiva needs to be lishma. But what about normal gittim? Remember, get just means a contract, doesn't mean a divorce. So what about normal gittim, the normal contracts? You can pick it up of garbage pail and you can have it signed lishma, and then lishma, you have it signed, and then it would be perfectly okay. What do you mean? How could it be perfectly okay? If anything looks like shikra, man, that sure looks like shikra. So how could you possibly do such a thing? I'm telling you, all I get, look at this. Baruch Hashem, they stuck Gavi next to you. Next thing you know, I'd be drinking yogurt as liquid. So apparently there's no problem of Michzik HaShikra. Because Rav Asi already paskened that Rav Yochanan said that if you have a shtar, so I'll bring you another raya here. You have a shtar, proof to you that they're made to Rabbi Meir. You have a shtar that you used against, say, Reuven has a shtar against Shimon. And that shtar was paid back today, this morning. Shimon comes along in the afternoon and says, look, I really need that money. Would you be willing to loan it again? So Reuven says, sure. You know, I see you're a reliable guy. You paid me back. And fortunately, we still have even the shtar. So you won't even have to have a new shtar written because it was a shtar on a loan that was borrowed in the morning. And I paid it back and it's the same day and it's the same lender and it's the same borrower. So great. We're all set. So here's the money. Give me the shtar and so on, right? But Rav Asi said that Rabbi Yochanan Paskin, you cannot use that shtar again. Why? Even if everything else is good. Because a shtar that you were loaved and already was paid back on the same day, you can't use it again, even if it's the same day, to be loaved. But why? A completely different issue. The issue is that a shtar remembers what creates the shibud, right? That was the whole takan of the Rabbanan. A shtar that was paid has canceled its power to create a shibud. And therefore, even though it's a new loan, you need a new shtar to create a new lien. And therefore, it's not going to help you. It's going to be a milvah alpeh. The shtar will be meaningless. Shekvar nimchal she'ibudo. Okay, so why can't I use this shtar, even though it's a lie? I can't use it because it's nimchal she'ibudo. But the fact that people will say, hey, wait a minute, what do you mean? That shtar was a shtar that they wrote on a different loan. What a bunch of phonies. That's not a problem. Mirsik Shikra, not a problem. So that would mean that the Rabbanan would allow you to use a shtar that you found in the garbage bin. So don't give me this stuff about Mimulay. Nah. Anyway, we have a lot of similar issues about the question of what you can rely on in terms of your own estimation of the way things ought to be. So here comes a guy. He had given someone a pikadon. Namely, Rabbi Asha was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We know Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi probably made a call to Gan Eden to make sure that he should accept this, you know. Anyway, so he accepts a handkerchief that's got these seven beautiful pearls, very, very valuable pearls that are all wrapped up. And, you know, that's exactly what they do with pearls even today. You know, they take a piece of felt and they close it over, you know. And all of a sudden, Rabbi Asha dies of a heart attack. And he was not expecting to die. So he didn't tell anybody that these things were, you know, maybe guys that belonged to somebody else. He didn't give any final will to his children or tell them what things are meant to be given to different people. So anyway, so his Yarshim together with the guy who claims, excuse me, that's my stuff, I want it back. And they say, I don't know, what do you mean it's your stuff? It's in our father's, was in our father's drawer. So they come to the Beis Din, to Rebbe Ami. And the one who says, listen, I gave it to the guy and, you know, I didn't think he was going to drop dead. And the Yorkshireman is saying, well, prove it. Maybe it belonged to our father. So Rebbe Ami said to them, look, number one, I happen to know your father very well. And he was a pauper. He didn't have any access to money that we don't know about. He was exactly as poor as we knew him to be. And there's no way that he could have bought anything like this. So if it's in his rishus, it was definitely somebody else had asked him to take care of it. Now you'll say, okay, but I mean, this guy, how do we know this guy is the guy? I mean, you want to say it's not our father's. Maybe it's not, but why should we give it to him? When somebody comes with a clear raya, he's got edim, whatever. So that's something else. But meanwhile, we'll make our own use of these pearls, you know? So he said, because secondly, the reason I feel we need to give it to this person is because of Kayoiv Simon. He is showing that he knows exactly what was going on. He said, look, it was wrapped up in a blue velvet and there were seven of them. And so this was the size. And so, okay, so he obviously is the guy that had given it. And this, however, you can only say such a thing, Lo Amram, the Lo Rogel, the Isle of Another Clause, it's only if the guy who is claiming that it's his pearls was not a friend that would go in and out of Rabbi Yashi's house. Because if he was, so then how do we know that he didn't happen to be present when someone else came and asked Rabbi Yashi to watch pearls and he saw exactly what was given? So then we can't trust the Simonim. You're right. In that case, we would never award the pearls to anyone without testimony. And therefore, maybe he was just an onlooker. And another maisa similar to this.
Rabbi, I'm sorry. Maybe Rabbi addressed that, I didn't catch it. But isn't it significant that you're saying three generations, like we know this family through and through, and not just I know his financial condition?
How do I know it through and through?
Because why am I mentioning his father and his grandfather, right? I'm stressing how intensely I know it's generations. There's an intimacy of knowledge.
It's a very interesting deal, but I don't know any that it's brought by anybody. La-la. It's because of that. It's that can very interesting. You're saying it probably wasn't because they had to send a telegram to Gan Eden.
I know this family through and through, and I know him. It said there was no entry. It's not right. Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. Because I mean, in the other cases, we don't have these atkedekach necessity. Okay. There was another guy who had a beautiful silver becher, and he gave it to Chasa. Remember Chasa and Yevomis who ended up drowning, and we said, "Oy, chaval," you know. But anyway, so this is the same Chasa. So Chasa, he was the one who was taking care of this becher. And he died suddenly, not of a heart attack, but of drowning. So low punking. Anyway, so the guy sues the Yorshim. He says, give me back my beautiful silver becher. They come to Reb Nachman. And he says, Reb Nachman says, listen, I know that Chasa did not have any money. So he couldn't have bought this becher. And furthermore, I'm giving it to this guy because he does have simonim on the becher. But again, that's only, said Reb Nachman, because the low Rogel Dayel Venafik La'asa. But if he would be Rogel Dayel Venafik La'asa, then I wouldn't be able to give it to him, and then you would be able to keep the Becher meanwhile. And the Emar Ina Shachrina Yifkid V'yum Mirsechosa. And in that case, we would really, they're not machli, have to keep that Becher as a Pikadon, because they could say, listen, it could be it's our father's, you know, and if the guy comes, fine, so then he'll sue us for the money. But why do we have to assume that we have to be Shemrim on it? Ahuda Afkid Metachsa. So there was another guy who gave his silk beged, and he asked Rav Dimi, who was Rav Safra's brother, to take care of it for him. Anyway, Rav Dimi died also from a heart attack and low pocket, and they come to Rav Abba. And again, so the guy who owns the silk beged comes to Rav Abba. He wants it back. The Yorshim say, how do we know it didn't belong to dad? Amar Lusi, Rav Abba said, well, Chada Diadana paper of Dimi Delo Amid. I know that Rav Dimi did not have any cash secreted away. There's no way he could have owned such a beautiful beged. Va'od, Akayav Simana. And as well, the same case. Amar Del Rogel, the Isle of Anafik Lahasam, Avaroga, the Isle of Anafik Lahasam, Emena Shachrina, Ifkid Vil Mirzechosa. So again, as I said, as the Rif brings, that when we have different cases in different places, it's the derech of the Gemara to repeat, even if there wouldn't be a new lima that we would have from each one. So it's just to show that this is halacha ravachat b'Yisrael, is his lashon. This is halacha ravachat b'Yisrael all over. This is what the Rambam often says. You know, that I know from all of the batei dinim, the shamanu, of any bezdin I ever heard of, this is the way they paskin. I mean, you know of some kind of crazy place where they don't paskin like this. But when a halacha is ravachat, I bring that as the halacha. And he always uses that lushan in such cases where it wasn't part of a klal of psak. But he uses kol bezdin to shamana shamam and so on. They always paskin like this. Good enough for me. Anyway, Ahudi Armalo, there was a guy who was dying. And he says, as his final will and testament, I want all my property to be given to Tuvia. Problem is, he didn't say which Tuvia. okay. So now, you know, if you happen to have overheard it, your name is Tuvia, you're in good shape. But so in this case, he dies. And a guy called Tuvia shows up and he says, oh, I'm a good friend of this gentleman, you know. And he told me he wanted to leave all of his property for me. So Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, here we are. Harepa Tuvia. Vayavai Tuvia. So we should be able to give everything over to, we're going to assume that a Tuvia who shows up and he knows that he was a friend and that this, so the fact later on, some other Tuvia comes on and say, hey, my name is also Tuvia. That doesn't bother me. This person is known to be his friend. Now, suppose the guy said Tuvia and comes along Rabbi Tuvia. And Rabbi Tuvia says, it's me. I'm Tuvia. But we tell him, he didn't say Rabbi Tuvia. He said Tuvia. Oh, no, my smicha was canceled. Anyway. So in this case, we are going to not give it to him because the guy didn't say it. So they said, the Besdin said to him, listen, he said it was for Tuvia. He didn't say it was for Rav Tuvia. But Lomaisa, if he has a very close, a friendly relationship with Rav Tuvia, and he would have referred to him without his title, so then fine. And if we know that Rav Tuvia was his friend, so Yinish de Gispe, someone who has like a, you know, a very open, long-term, casual relationship with him. So then, then it's not a problem. They didn't call him rabbi. He never calls him rabbi. But what if two Tuvias come? And now we got trouble. So we have two Tuvias. Okay. One of them is a neighbor, and the other one is a Talmud Chacham. Now, he knows both of them. Which one of them do you think he meant by giving away property on his deathbed to Tuvia? Well, it's reasonable to say that since he's dying and he knows that it says that, like Rashi brings, you know, call on Nevi'im, all of the Nevi'is about Olam Haba, that was only somebody who was Mahana Talmud Chacham Minachasa. But if he's himself a Talmud Chacham, Allah, I mean, then the Nevi'im couldn't even talk about that. So probably this guy wanted to be Mahana Talmud Chacham on his way to what he hopes is his Olam Haba. So therefore, the Talmud Chacham is Kaidem. Okay, and what about a neighbor and a relative? Would we go for the relative or what? Tashma, Tov Shachin Karov Miach Rachok. That sometimes a neighbor is better than a Karov, because he's Karov, but he's Rachok. So there's such a thing as far away, close people, krovim rechokim. Okay, what about if both of them? We have no reason to assume that he meant one person about it or another person. What do we do with the money in such a case? We both of them are tuvias. That's a shudah d'dayani. So this, remember, we've spoken about this many times. Big machlokas, what shudah d'dayani means. Does shudah d'dayani does it mean which one the person was most likely to have given it to, Alpi, the Das of the Beis Din, who can say we know him and we estimate that he would rather have given it to A than B? Or is Shudda de Dayane, according to many other Rishonim, is Shudda de Dayane mean that the Beis Din can make the determination on their own of what to do with the money according to the basis of what the Dayanim feel? This is a big machlokas that we've spoken about, and here is not the place to get into the multiple rayas and issues of what the Psak of Shudda Dayane is based on, but that is the din where we have no basis that is clear. Omele Rav Lebreid Reb Chiya Bar Avin. Rav said to Reb Chiya Bar Avin's son, I want to tell you something that your father used to say, and it's really a wonderful thing, and I want you to know it. And what your father, Reb Chiya Bar Avin, used to say was that when Shmuel came up with this famous psak, that if somebody sells a shtar chov to a friend, so in that case, he's got an IOU, and he sells the IOU with an endorsement to allow this buyer to collect on the basis of this IOU, and he makes a kinyan, and they'll have a discussion tomorrow what kind of kinyan works, but anyway, it worked. Now, the same guy goes, and he's meichel the chov. Because, I mean, the shtar only works if the chov still exists. But the chov is a chov that is between him and the borrower. So he goes, and he's mochel that chov. The din is that the chov is mochel, and there's nothing that he can do it. So if the person who bought the IOU tries to collect, the guy says, well, there is no such chov. So basically, there's two completely different issues. There's the IOU, or the shtar with the eidim, whatever it is, which created the she'ibud. And then there's the loan itself. I can't sell the loan. The loan is a reality that's between me and this guy. So the most that I can do is sell the she'ibud that is there in order to collect the loan. If I meichel it, I meichel it. And therefore, there's nothing that he can do to collect it. Fine. All right, we'll see tomorrow about what the din is in terms of needing to pay him back for the money that he used to purchase the IOU, but that's a different issue. But basically, you can be chozer u'mochel, and it's mochul. And, added Shmuel, afilu yoresh mochel. So even if the man who made the loan, he died, but there are yorshim, they can also be mochel. So here's what your father said. Your father said that Shmuel is meida, that in a case of a woman who is machneset shtar chov lebaala, so it would be a case where as nichse malug, so she owns the nichse malug, remember, and the baal is ochel the peirot. So in this case, she owns basically this IOU and the value of whatever the actual loan was, and the Baal owns the rights to whatever can be collected on the basis of its value. So that if you invest the money of its value and so on, he gets to eat the peros. Now, in that case, if she would try to be mochelet, just to mess up her husband, so she would try to be mochelet the loan that she owns, there she can't be chozer to mochel. Because as we said before, once there's already a nisuin, so neither of them can be mochel because yadoki yada. They both own this. And his owning the peros is sufficient to prevent her from being mochelet. So there was a relative of Reb Nachman who was exactly in a situation like this. What happened was that she sold her ksuva for 10 cents to the dollar. So she needed some money. She had a favorite hobby that she wanted. Her husband refused to give her money. So she went ahead and she sold her ksuva. So she took the 10 cents for a dollar and she went ahead and she invested in her racing cars. Anyway, so as any good woman would do. So then he divorces her. And after that, he dies. She dies. And she has a daughter. And now this daughter, the only thing she had to live on was the ksuva that should be coming from this woman's husband. So she wants to get that ksuma. So otakatavi with a barata. But meanwhile, the people who had bought the ksuma at 10 cents for a dollar, they go ahead and they sue the daughter and they want the ksuma. She didn't know anything about it. This is what she was planning on living off of. It's a disaster. So now, since this child, well, I shouldn't say child, I mean, whatever, but since this daughter was a relative of Reb Nachman, so Reb Nachman felt terrible because he knew that there was a way for her to get out of this problem. So Reb Nachman said to the people that not directly, you know, to her, but he said it maybe to his Talmidim. Anyway, we don't know who the Lahu is, but and the truth is probably Lahu is a mistake, because in all of the cases like this, it's always as if the person is talking to himself. There's no one for him to say it to, particularly. So Amar Reb Nachman, gee, what a shame. Nobody intelligent out there who could tell this girl that there's an easy solution. Leka de Lisfala Eitza. I mean, why can't there be some intelligence in the world? All she needs to do is to go back to her father, who is the one that has to pay the ksuva, right? So let her go back to the father and tell the father that she is mochelet, the chiev that the father has to pay the ksuva. Because since her mother died after the divorce, before she had a chance to collect the ksuva, and this daughter is the only heiress to her mother, and she's telling the person who owns the debt to her mother, you don't have to pay. So this is a classic case of Shmuel, right? Somebody had bought the debt, in this case, the debt was a ksuva, for 10 cents to the dollar, and now he's not going to be able to collect it, because the shibud is all very nice, but it's a shibud for a non-extant loan, namely the ksuva. And that way, she won't have a problem, and ultimately, when the guy dies, she's going to get that money anyway in the end, right? So she hears, however it was Reb Nachman said it, you know, but she managed to overhear. Of course, little did he know that the Zoom was open, open mic, you know how it goes, these things. Anyway, so she hears about it, and she does exactly that. So she goes to her father, she's mochelet the debt, and she says, you don't have to pay mom's ksuv. Okay, great. So now these guys are out their money. Mamaisa, by the way, there's a big machlokas rishonim b'mitzvah. Because in doing this, he's being mafsid people their money. I mean, would he do that? So Enochinami, many say that it was only on condition that she pays the guy back the 10 cents to the dollar, that he shouldn't lose that. But at least she doesn't have to lose the whole money. And then Reb Nachman starts kicking himself, just like Reb Yochanan did in the other case. Reb Nachman, ay, 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 what do I think I am, a lawyer? God help us. First thing, kill all the lawyers. Oh, no. So here he is, Reb Nachman, and he's saying, how could I have said such a thing and made myself like a lawyer? What life in hell awaits me? Wait a minute. I mean, he wasn't, all of a sudden he's thinking that he's a lawyer, and beforehand, I mean, what was he thinking that he said this then? He obviously held that it was mutter. To me, kora my kasavar lebesof, my kasavar. So the same thing we said on Rabbi Yochanan, Mikora Savam Umi Bisarcha Lotitalam, that it says in the Pasek, listen, Yeshayahu Hanavi is mechayev you not to pretend that you don't know what needs to do to be done in order to help a relative. And this girl is my relative. But in the end, he felt that even though that was true and that he should have given this advice under normal circumstances, but since it's Reb Nachman, an Adam Choshev is shiny, because other people will learn from this to even be Meshaker. You know, they're not going to be my base. Well, Reb Nachman went ahead and he gave a good Eitzah, so I'll give a good Eitzah, even though, like lawyers do, they don't give a good Eitzah that's a legal Eitzah. They give a good Eitzah that's not a legal Eitzah, not a true Eitzah. But this is what you could do to get out of it. You could always claim that. I mean, classic lawyerdom, right? You could always claim that. And that would be terrible. So he was afraid that even though she was going to pay back the 10 cents to the dollar and so on and so forth, say the Rishonim, that Afal Pi Kein people would learn from him that it would be okay to give an Eitzah even if it wasn't a real Eitzah. Therefore, he was actually kicking himself for having done it in the end. He felt it was a mistake. Could be so. Maybe he heard somebody. Maybe a maisa happened, and then he saw that people would learn. Okay, Rabosai, that was lovely. A lot of halacha lemaisas and some frightening insights into the nature of trustworthiness, memory, and the way that a bezdin has to respond. It's absolutely incredible to me that something that was such an amazing cherish in the Gemara should be completely and totally, just like so many things that are inherited from Esav, and mamish people don't realize that they are living the system of values of Esav, and like it becomes a Torah portion, that the way to think about things is the way that people think about things on the internet. I mean, it's mamish beyond belief. Even the fact that Esav believes now in Esav, it used to be a place like it, you know, a place where there were people that really cared about truth and justice in the American way, they would call in Superman in cases like this, where somebody would believe someone that is not a Bar Samcha. And it's unbelievable, complete and total hefkeres on the most fundamental issues of Mishpat, which has to do with memory and trustworthiness. Astounding. We've spoken about how this part of Bechukotai Telechu is like one of the essential problems of the Golos, is that we are not even aware, and even Batei Dinim aren't aware of how deeply affected they have been from taking Kipashtis, because you don't think about it, because it's a cultural inheritance. I mean, obviously, this is the way to look at things, isn't it? If you don't start off with the question of what does the Torah say about how to look at things, more importantly, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from you in terms of Chok and Mishpat and Lazarus Chesed and Emes and so on, then your entire life is totally messed up, even though you're trying to be a good, honest person. And those people who generally walk around with that smug feeling of being absolutely moral people are the ones that are most likely, because they think they could trust themselves. They could trust everybody else, right? So those people are the ones who are most likely to be completely and totally connected to Torah while all the time espousing what they believe to be the emes. It's a very frightening thing. It's what we've just been working on in terms of the entire concept of Nechama and Teshuva, is to recognize those deficits in our own selves and in our own thinking. So it's very good daf for the Aseres Yemei Teshuva. Okay, everyone, Kol Tov. Thanks for putting up with me for yet another day. May we be so glad to have people putting up for tomorrow too. Have a wonderful day.